So I think all the time really that Rodriguez Hernandez put into Patrick was in that first half of that marathon, which made it incredibly exciting because we had Marquardt up the front as well, doing all crazy kind of things. So it was Ironman racing at its finest in terms of the way that attritional nature and some of those things that I guess the diehard fans of the sport absolutely love, and you can only get in that kind of racing, or let's say you can only get a Grand Slam tennis when it goes into the fourth or even the fifth hour of a five setter and the guys are literally out on their feet, and yet you know and it's just absolutely gripping. I mean,
welcome to The Greg Bennett Show. I'm your host, Greg Bennett, and this was an absolutely fantastic conversation with Tim Hemming. Tim, he knows everything there is to know in the world of triathlon. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation as we discussed the Olympics, the PTO and the T100 series, Ironman, and every other event in between. We discuss all the athletes, the professional athletes and what they're up to and who we think is going to win events like the Olympic Games, the T100 series, Kona and Nice Ironmans. So much in this one. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. It really was fantastic. A little bit of housekeeping before we go on. If you are enjoying the show, please take a moment. Go give me a review on Apple and maybe a 5-star rating if you're up for it. And if you can do that, it'd be fantastic. You can always give me feedback and advice on Instagram, DMs. Love to hear your input, who you'd love to hear on the show, who you want me to have conversations with. I do take that on board and it guides the show a little bit. But Tim, we covered so much with him on this one. I'm going to have him come back on every 6 months or so because it really was a fantastic conversation and he's incredibly knowledgeable. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And remember, success comes to those who endure. Just one moment longer. All right. Today's guest is a renowned sports writer and a veteran observer of the world of triathlon. A journalist with 2 decades of writing about and researching endurance sports, he has provided deep insights into the triumphs and the trials of triathlon. His work spans pivotal moments from grassroots stories to Olympic glory, capturing the essence of what drives athletes to push beyond their limits. Known for his thoughtful commentary and critical eye, he has become a respected voice in triathlon journalism, contributing to major publications and shaping discussions around the sport's key issues. I'm delighted to welcome him to the show, and I'm excited to discuss the state of the union of triathlon, its past, present, and future. So, without further ado, welcome and thanks for joining me on The Greg Bennett Show, Tim Hemming. How are you, mate?
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me on. You know what? That's the second time in a week someone's called me a veteran, and I don't think I've ever been called that in the past. So.
I'm sorry, buddy.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It just means you've got so much more wisdom. That's all we're unlocking, all this wisdom. Excited to have you on the show. I was just telling you before I hit the recording switch that I'm a huge fan of yours on X, previously Twitter, and your tweets. I feel like you're my man that keeps me up to date, actually, on everything in the sport. And if I want to dive deeper, I can. But, you know, I've enjoyed following on Twitter, X, and just your insights, mate. So thanks for all you're doing for the sport.
Oh, no, Greg, thank you. And, you know, thanks for having me on. And like we were discussing about Twitter or X, it's just getting that balance between, like, the humorous stuff, right, because it's only sport at the end of the day, and then sometimes when a more serious story breaks and relaying it so people can understand in under 260 characters or however many the limit is now. But, say social media, God, you could do a whole episode on social media, right? I think most of us hate it, but we kind of see it as, like, a necessary evil to get messages out there, and then definitely sometimes you can have some real fun with it as well. And some of the interactions, you and I both know Brad Culp, who's kind of been in and around endurance sport for a while. So
yeah, I was mentioning Brad to you before show.
Yeah, exactly. A spiky acerbic individual if ever there was one, and we love him all the more for it.
I love Brad Culp, and if you're listening, Brad, we love your work, mate. Keep this sport light and fun, mate. And I know you take the piss out of a lot of people. I enjoy Brad. I actually find with both you and Brad and many others, quite often it's your post But then I go and read the comments just to get the temperature of the room. I love it. People get upset pretty easy, don't they?
They really do. Yeah, exactly. I think that's probably one positive trait I have. I probably don't have many, but the one thing is if somebody does make a criticism of me, I do kind of like try and listen to what they're saying and see if there's any merit and justification in that. Oftentimes there is actually. And so, if you do, then you can actually learn quite a lot from that. But the ways of the world now is we take our stance and we shout very loudly and deflect, right?
So. Well put, mate. You know, it's funny you say that because I know, and people are kind of going to nod their heads to this. Sometimes I can talk too much on this show, or I got to be careful of not interrupting. And it gets pointed out to me, you know, somebody, Greg, I love that episode, but you interrupted. I said, damn it. You know, and it's like at first, to your point, you deflect a bit. Oh, come on. And then it's like you stop and think and go, yeah, I guess I do that. Thanks for letting me know. As much as it hurts.
In your defense, though, and you know, obviously compliments do here, and I've listened to like many episodes of your podcast. You've got such a wealth of knowledge from your racing days, experience, and also you know the athletes personally. So I think a lot of that interpersonal stuff is well worth putting in rather than you just being a person asking the questions and letting them answer. I do think that your input's like hugely valuable as well. So yeah, don't beat yourself up too much for it.
Oh, mate, flattery goes a long way with me. I appreciate that. Hey, let's do this. Quick background on who you are, how you got into the world of endurance sports and triathlon journalism.
I was thinking about this, like, so in terms of when people ask me, you know, do you do triathlon or do you do sports? And my answer to that is I've played enough sport in my life to realize that I am absolutely bang average at all of it, right? So there was never any danger of me, you know, reaching elite status in kind of anything at all, which I suppose in one way is good and in one way is bad, but that's the way it is. But the thing that's overriding for me through all of this is I've always loved sport. And I remember as a kid watching, like staying up all night to watch the Seoul Olympics in 1988. And I can still remember that 100 meters final. I actually fell asleep for the 10 seconds of the semi-final, which was the Ben Johnson, Carl Lewis, and then, you know, the dirtiest race in history as it was then. And I just absolutely adored it. And I went and did some work experiences to be a journalist when I was at school, and actually that kind of slightly put me off at the time, but in a strange kind of way I worked myself back to it, and then I ended, I suppose, like you said at the start, I've been doing journalism for over 20 years, probably more like 25 years.
I shortchanged you.
Yeah, a little bit. But sport was always at the forefront, and I would say that I'd cover all sport. You know, I grew up playing football. I grew up playing tennis, and football or soccer, depending on what part of the world you are, just dominates so much of the sporting coverage. So if you were doing sport, and then when I moved to London and I was working at the newspapers there, and I was trying to do as much sport as I could, and obviously football super dominated a load of that. I still always had that love for endurance as well, though. And I think it was perhaps running up, really started to focus on it after Beijing 2008, and it was the run up to the London Olympic Games. And then, you know, in triathlon, we had two kind of wet behind the ear kids that came through that no one had ever heard of, right? But they're from Yorkshire and they're brothers, and it could be, I don't know, Greg, do you think it's ever going to be a story? and I generally, you know, I was working at News International at the time, which is the Sun, the Times, Sunday Times, and that fold of papers. And I was like, do you know what? Actually, this could be something worth following. I was doing more running as well. I've got two not so young girls now, and I'd stopped playing team sports, and I was started to do much more individual type stuff. So it definitely piqued my interest as well in terms of, you know, my own health and fitness. And I think those two coincided, and I thought, actually, it's a great sport, and you could see what was happening at the elite end. So I started to do some more coverage, and then around 2012 time, I became yeah, like more focused. The 220 Triathlon, which is the UK magazine, they got in touch with me, I think, directly after that Olympics, and I've written for them ever since. And then over the years, you know, Triathlete in the US that I've written for. And then I've ended up just doing more and more things in the sport, you know, guests on podcasts and some broadcasts and things like that as well. So, yeah, there's a kind of a quick summary into the background.
That's awesome, mate. And did you ever get yourself on a start line of a triathlon then, or are you?
No, I've done a fair share of, I've done triathlon. So, and I did a couple of, they weren't actually Ironman branded races, but I did a couple of Iron Distance where are we talking? Like, it's probably 12 years ago now, I would say. And like I said, it was always bang average. I think I was like, my quickest time was 11 hours and 1 minute or something. So, and I was, could never swim, still can't, but still enjoy trying. Never put the bike hours in that I was ever gonna, that I needed. So I was always soft on the bike, but I could build up a fitness. So I was generally okay on by the time it came to the run. So I could run, I think it was like, a 3:30 marathon. And when you're generally going that kind of, that's like overall slow, if you like, it's quite nice because you're catching a lot of people on the marathon. But yeah.
Look, mate, I think most people that are listening, and I've met so many of them on I do this thing called Fireside Friday chats. And I just set up this window where people can call in. It's been really wonderful, by the way, just having these chats, which I'm encouraging everybody to set your own Fireside Fridays up and just network around the world. It's been really cool. But I think most people are nodding their heads going, yeah, I'm average too, mate. And what I'll say is that nobody listening is ordinary or has an average journey to talk about. Everybody's got a great story. And whether your time in a race or whatever, we're all pretty much average, buddy. It's like, I love it. What I want to do now is just chat about kind of broad strokes before we get into a bit of detail. The state of the union of triathlon, you see it today. And do you think it's in a good place as a whole?
That's a really broad question.
Really broad. We're going to go deeper, but I just want to get a big brush.
It feels like it's come from a place where the word I'd use for this is pioneering. And when I first started doing a lot of triathlon journalism, we did a lot of stories that went back looking in the annals and the history of the sport. And there was definitely a sense of that pioneering culture. You know, they'd be going out to find different locations, different race distances, what worked, what equipment worked, coming from other sports. And it was a big old adventure. Where I think we are today, that's been lost, and that's probably a natural thing because of, as the sport's matured somewhat. But I think there are a lot of other interesting aspects that have come into the sport. So at the moment, I think we're in a really interesting place, like a fascinating place, I think, in many ways, both at an amateur and a professional level. And in some ways, I think we're on a bit of a knife edge right now, and it really could go either way.
That's really cool. I like that you talk about it, that when you first came in, it was all about pining. I actually think we're losing. I watch golf a lot because it relaxes me on a Sunday afternoon. And the one thing I've always loved about golf, and they have their own turmoil going on with LIV and everything else, but at its core, they still do have they hold on to their history, you know, whether we're talking Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer or any of the others that have gone before, Tiger Woods now more recently, but they really celebrate their greats and their great events. And the one thing I fear with triathlon is we're so adamant about trying new things. Or am I still trying to find our place in the world still? You know, we have Kona Ironman, which is our one kind of holy grail, if you want to call it. And even that we've kind of played around with the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I kind of fear that we're always looking for the greatest of all time athlete. We're always announcing every year there's another GOAT. We're having new series spring up everywhere. Do you get that sense? We're still kind of trying to lay some foundation here.
Yeah, completely. I guess that was one of the irony of what the PTO said at their launch, is that they were trying to consolidate the sport and bring it together. Whereas really it was just throwing another element in to add to what we've already got. And it's that big like potpourri of, you know, you take your choice where you want to go. And on one hand, that's quite a good thing. It means that there's interest. It means that there's options. And from a pro side, it means that there's opportunity, right, to make a living. But I 100% hear you and agree with you about establishing those legacy events, which the Hawaii Ironman is clearly one of them, and Challenge Roth would clearly be another one. Maybe there's a few there that are slightly lower down, which would be like the, you know, I guess like your Ironman New Zealand's and the like. And I think the sooner that we can get some of those in place where you go into this event, whatever that might be, and saying, you know what, this is everything about this event works, and we want this event to be in place for years, and it doesn't feel transient, then that'll put us in a better place. But that's clearly really difficult, right? Because everyone knows that, event organizers know that, and yet it's very hard to kind of establish that. It's like we almost want the best of all worlds. So we want an event that's incredible on broadcast, but we also want it to be broadcastable. So we take it into the big cities who might pay bigger hosting fees. But then when it comes down to watching it on TV and we're zooming in on the bike or the runner, I mean, a good example perhaps was just even at the weekend watching the Ironman Texas in.
Yes.
Yeah. I've never been to the Woodlands, but by all accounts, I hear good report of the Woodlands. But when you see the bike course, the way that it has to be framed to show the cyclists, it just looks like a really dull kind of toll road or dual carriageway. And you want that, I don't know, that, you know, that Tour de France kind of frisson of when they're riding through this like scenic places, and it's a bit of up and a bit of down and a bit of change. And then you get a little bit of background. And I think we need to try to capture some of that as well. So a really, really difficult task that we've definitely not got there yet.
Well said, mate. And you just painted some great pictures in my mind as we and I think, you know, I've said on the show a couple of times more recently, as we look at the T100 series from the PTO and what they're trying to do. And the only reason I've given a little pushback is more, I feel, you know, if you overpromise and I feel like to some degree maybe underdeliver, I'll let you know. That's not to say people aren't trying hard and working hard to make something great happen. But I still look at the sport in the sense of the diehards, people that love it, they'll watch anything. Doesn't matter. they'll watch Woodlands, they'll watch Singapore or Miami T100s. It doesn't matter. They love it. They're going to watch it. They're into it. But when you talk about saying, well, how do we get to a mass appeal, you know, and the PTO have brought in, you know, ex-tennis people and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And how do we get to the masses? It's a tricky one. And it's like, do you just focus on what we have and be grateful for that? You know, the Ironmans that you mentioned, and I even think of like Noosa Multisport and the London Triathlon and Geneva and all these other amazing events that have been around for 30, 40 years. And do we just hone in and really let those flourish? Or do we keep trying to create new events and new styles of racing, you know, Super Tri or the T100? You know, what do you think? Are we on the right track, or should we be pulling back and just hone in on what we have?
Well, again, it's a really good question and a really difficult question to answer. I liked everything you said in the first part about, you know, consolidating with the events that we've got and making them flourish and being proud of those events. And I think I perhaps lean more towards that than I do to the experimental side of things. You know, I think we definitely have experimented over the past few years. And some of those have been, I would say some of them have been a good success as well. I mean, some of the Super Dry stuff that they've done and the way that they've innovated, you know, and you can talk around the broadcasts or the way that they do the formats of the racing. And I know some of that's a throwback. Did you ever race that short stuff, by the way?
My whole career is established on that.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, miles,
exactly.
All
yeah.
through the 90s, every Aussie, that's all we wanted. Live television, you know.
Exactly. You know, I should have known that, or maybe you should have won more so I knew that. I don't know. One of the two.
Yes, I wasn't on the radar as much. I was getting my butt handed to me by Brad Bevan and Greg Welsh on every weekend.
But did So just on that as a quick segue, you must have known Benny Sanson then, or Benji Sanson,
course,
did you?
Of course, Benny and Jerome actually lived with us for a while. And
oh, wow, really? Yeah, okay. Because not for this podcast, or honestly, probably for any podcast ever, but I did spend a wonderful few days with Benji in Antigua a few years ago.
And, love Benny. Love Ben Sanson.
He is a very memorable character.
The most entertaining man, I think, ever in the world of triathlon.
Absolutely.
Big shout out to him and his brother, Jerome. Awesome guys.
Yeah, no, completely.
We digress.
Yeah, we totally do. So I think, you know, I think the answer to it is it's not black and white. Some things that we're doing now are very, very good, but then we also can't lose sight of what we already have got. And I think, honestly, the way the sport's evolving at the moment and some of the investment that is going in, not everything's going to stick anyway, Greg. You know, are Ironman going to carry on investing in the pros? I hope so. Is T100 going to be around in 3, 4, 5 years time again? I hope so. And similarly with Super Tri. And if they all are around in that period of time, you know what, that shows that something's working, right? And at that point, we have had some cut through and we are hitting the mainstream enough. And I think enough is the key here because we're not trying to compete with the four American sports. We're not trying to compete with soccer, but what we do need is enough interest to get enough big name advertisers, sponsors, and enough, I suppose, of an affluent fan. We know it attracts affluent individuals to the sport, and so therefore it's in some ways it's a marketer's dream, right? The fan base that we can have as a sport. So if we can understand that and get enough of an audience, then we're on the right track.
I love how you put that. It's funny, I've had Dr. Tommy Wood on the show numerous times, and the last episode we were discussing, you know, about just being better each day, you know, just being better. Stop using words like optimal or optimize. Just be a little bit better. And so when you said enough, it's almost that kind of a mindset. Like if we can just keep chiseling away, it doesn't feel like it's not possible then. You know what I mean? If we say, we've got to be like tennis or golf. So whoa. We're just searching to expand a little bit more over the next 3 to 5 years in each of those categories, whether it be Super Tri, T100 or the Ironman. And if we can be just better, we will find success. You know, whatever that success looks like for each of those groups. But
the challenge with that, I guess, is from an investor's perspective, it has to come quickly enough.
Yes, yes. If I'm writing the $10 million checks to the PTO to the Super Tri, and it's like, here's another $3 million to keep the series going. It's like, at some point I want to see some return. Okay, well, let's narrow down the focus a little bit, you know.
Yeah, totally.
T100, we've had two races in Miami and Singapore. Firstly, overall thoughts of those events?
Yeah, I think the T100 idea is for the 8-race series as a whole, to me, it's quite intoxicating. And I separate that away from the actual broadcast product that we've seen so far. So just the idea, I think the unpredictability of it, I couldn't tell you who's going to win, particularly not on the men's side at all. And I think that side of it is really, really good. And the buzz and hype that there has been around it since the launch, I think that's all a positive as well. And I think they need to work on the broadcast, Greg, if I'm honest. But I think that they know that as well, and they've had some challenges there, right? They need to get the team right, and they're working towards that. They need to get the stats and the data working more efficiently. But I think you and I know this, they know this, and perhaps also the listeners, I'm sure, will know this as well, because that's been a constant one that people have been banging the drum about for them. So, yeah, that's
great. That was, look, a very political correct answer, or a very safe answer.
Okay. I mean, I mean, the thing with the T100 is like the way the broadcast is at the moment, it's not going to dramatically jump from what we've seen so far. To something that's knock your socks off unbelievable. And partly that's because of the the race format. And partly that's because of the venues that it's been to. Mm-hmm. And so I think the excitement does have to come from within the racing itself. Yeah. So therefore we could critique the fact that they've only got 20 in each field and say, is that actually enough to deliver the kind of exciting racing that we want, or does it become something of a procession? The other thing to bear in mind is we've been to Miami and we've been to Singapore, and it's been roasting hot on both of those, so it's just been a survival, right? And somewhat of a death march for some of the athletes. So I genuinely am not, you know, there's a lot of things I could criticize T100 for, but at the moment I'm not going to kick them too much for where they are on the broadcasting side.
No, and well said, mate. I wasn't hammering you too much there. And look, I think you and I are absolutely on the same page. Firstly, I think both of us want to do a big shout out to Sam Renouf and his whole team. We know they're working incredibly hard, and we know their why is a really great why. You know, they really are trying to see if they can take this sport to another level, and I think that's awesome. And I think the only reason we all stand here and pick out faults or say this could be done better or not, it's because we all love the sport too, and we're all on the journey with you. And so take it as feedback and advice rather than harsh criticism. And I think, yes, the broadcasting's a big one. I do think the format is, you know, and I've mentioned on the show before, I feel like you've got eyeballs, listeners that are used to 1.5 to 2 hours for a big event, whether you're talking, tennis. You're often watching a tennis final. You're watching Sinner versus Alcaraz. If it goes to three sets, you might be up to 2 hours, maybe a bit longer on the really big matches. Yes, the Grand Slams go a lot longer. Golf, 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon. If you look at the ratings charts for golf, it just blows the yes, it's a 4-day event, but it really is just the last couple of hours that people are really tuning in. And so my mindset is always, start at the destination, at the finishing line. And what does the finishing look like when you're talking about viewership? It's like, well, you have 1.5 to 2. That's it. And maybe for the men's and maybe for the women's, there's two separate. But the idea of having a 3.5-hour race, you're already, I think, hurting yourself a little bit. I still think there's a massive space in this sport to go back and somebody own the Olympic distance non-drafting. I don't just say that because that was my forte and it was awesome, but I feel like that's the empty spot in our sport. I feel like Ironman already have the 70.3 in the Ironman races. Then you've got the ITU with their draft legal series, and you've got I would have said an Olympic distance, non-drafting, hour 45 for men, hour 55 for women was the perfect format. So that's my two cents on the format.
No, I mean, that's fair. And I would throw back to you at this point. What was the original premise of the PTU / PTO? Who was it there to support originally? And that was, as you know, I mean, it was the long distance athletes, right?
Gotcha. Well, I didn't. Yeah. Well, then,
And so therefore, and everything you say, like, I'm not arguing against that, but then, are we bastardizing the product so much that we're effectively changing the product? Yes, I think we are, from what you say. But then that then creates an argument, actually, to bring, I would say, the World Triathlon Championship Series and what PTO are doing actually together. And would they be stronger with one series? Whether that's a mixture of draft, legal, and non-drafting Olympic distance. That could potentially work, and that would be a truer partnership, and it would also allow it still to be linked to the Olympic Games for Olympic qualification, and it might actually help consolidate a bit, which is something that Sam Renouf has mentioned around how they are trying to consolidate and bring the sport together. Ooh, because that's the other kind of flip side of what T100 are trying to do, and they very much are, as Ironman do, trying to make it all about T100. Is that what's happening with the World Triathlon Championship Series, which is really what crowns our triathlon world champion and has done every year since, since 2009 is a series inception, but even before that, when it was a one-off shoot tag. And I do feel that's been lost. I wrote a column about it a couple of months ago, and it was like, could you name the men's world triathlon champion right now?
Nope.
Nope. And I definitely, this is the thing, right? And so But you're going to come out of retirement then, mate. If we can talk this down enough to Olympic distance, we can get Greg.
If it has chin ups and pull ups and a bit of bicep curling,
High Rocks territory now.
I know. Having Sebi on the other day, he was like, "Greg, you got to get and join me." And then I called my gym right away. I went, "Have we got a sled machine that we can use at the gym?" They don't have sledding, so I'm like, "Oh man, I need to get a sled." Anyway, I'm a long way from doing that. But look, you got me thinking, and it's a thought that I also had. Remember when, because I, most of my career was, like you said, single day world championship, you know, boom, you win the one day, you're the world champion. And then in 2009, as you mentioned, they changed it to whoever wins this series. And when they first started talking about the series, I thought, won't this be fantastic to have 5 to 8 different races around the world, potentially all different formats, distances, to really crown who is the greatest triathlete in the world. You know, that is my mind as going, you know, if you had the race one might be a super tri series, either an eliminator format or one of the, you know, the triple sprint. The next one might be a non-drafting Olympic distance. The next one might be a sprint distance drafting. The next one might be a 70.3. You could break it down and have all these different distances, all these different formats. And whoever's at the end, you're like, okay, I know this person was able to do everything. That's what makes them unique and special. What happened was we got 8 events, all pretty much flat. Maybe they put a tiny hill in every now and then. You know, we got lucky with that one in Austria once. But generally speaking, same format. You know, people that don't like hot races avoid those ones. You know, they go to the cool races. And that's the other problem I see with the T100. And I wrote, Sam, when they contracted all these athletes, but they don't have to be at all 8 races. And it's like, well, hang on. And now we're seeing the wild cards are winning all these races anyway. If you're going to contract an athlete, they should be going to every single race, turning up and doing every race. And everybody has to handle the travel and the pressure and the injuries. And that's the whole point of being a professional. You turn up. And if you can't, you don't win.
I saw it when you made that point. And it's not, I didn't disagree with you actually. I think moving forward now, there are so many athletes that have missed either Miami and Singapore or both who are contracted that they are now going to have to race every remaining race in the series. But there's also another challenge that they've got, for example, with Yuri Kulin, who came fourth in Miami and then won in Singapore. Now, he's a wild card. So in theory, as it currently stands, when we get to the grand final,
He doesn't start.
And yet it's going to be, that would be something of a nonsense given the 2 results he's got already.
He's winning the series.
Exactly. he's in a place to win the series and he can't get on the start list. So something may have to give there. And that, I mean, that's probably an unforeseen consequence of, you know, drawing up a series like this with 8 races and 20 athletes on the start.
Again, I don't want to come down as morbid. I'm more an enthusiast of the sport and I'm just sort of talking about how I would do it and how I would love it. But it's, again, I have my preferences to the style of racing and everything else. You know, and I think it's, I just, you mentioned it earlier. I think it's a very exciting time to be a professional athlete. I think, you know, whether you're following the Ironman series, which we haven't really discussed yet, but or the T100, or if you're a short course specialist and you have Super Tri and you have the Olympics and you have the World Series. And then don't forget, you still got Challenge Roth and Challenge and all their events. And there's still big one-off events all around the world that all have reasonable prize money that if you're performing pretty well, in prize money alone, you could be doing quite well. Now, I get it that it can be harder to, now there's more professional athletes that all have resumes that look wonderful. So it can be harder to get endorsements, but still a pretty good time to be a professional triathlete. Would you agree?
100%. Yeah, it's a great time. Definitely. Yeah. And I think actually in terms of some of the sponsorship and potentially reaching out for that non-endemic sponsorship, you can say you're an Ironman champion, whereas 3 years ago, it may have been much tougher to be an Ironman champion.
That's true.
If that can help you, then that's got to be good. And I mean, again, you'll probably know better than me, but I have a, you know, fair idea that in terms of what those sponsorships and endorsements are, they can be considerably more than what you're ever going to earn in prize money. And so they are super important to your career as a pro triathlete.
Yeah. Depending on who you are and what you're offering, I say to a lot of these young guys is, You've got to, when you're talking to these brands, you understand that they're looking at return on investment. They might be a fan, but they still want to sell products. So figure out what can you offer beyond just a, you know, finish line performance. What are you doing beyond that? And, you know, from the brands that I've worked with, it's kind of like we look at athletes that are doing more than just crossing a finishing line first or second or third or whatever. It's like, I want to know if you're coaching people, if you're involved in your community and clubs and blah, 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 blah. So keep that in mind, everybody. Let's move on to talking about some of the athletes around. And has there been any performances in 2024 that have sort of you've looked at and gone, wow? You know, you mentioned Yuri
Gulin. Yeah, big races. I mean, one that just happened 2 days ago, Thomas Rodriguez Hernandez. Tell me about Thomas, Greg.
2:34 marathon. Where did he come from? I'm sorry, Thomas. You could be a fan of this show, but mate, outstanding, running away from Patrick Langer. Come on.
Did you catch any of it live at all? Or you
No, I was more post. I actually, you know what I was getting? Some of your tweets and things on Twitter. I you know, occasionally throughout the day would get it, but with a 4 and a 6 year old, I don't get a lot of time.
Totally understood. I was doing some coverage on that one, so I was tuned in. But you know, the really exciting thing around that was he ran that first half of that marathon in a low 73 minutes.
Yes, I saw that. 1:14.
You know, and actually, had it been another mile or maybe another 2 miles, you do wonder how close Patrick Langer would have got to him as well. Because Patrick was running. And I wonder what Patrick thinks about this, because, you know, we know how much he prides himself on being the fastest marathon runner in the sport.
What did Patrick end up running?
He ran only about a minute slower, I think. So, seriously? Yeah, another solid run for Patrick, but a more evenly judge pace run, you know?
Yeah. Well, he's always done that. Patrick's always been a very strong finisher. The last 10 to 15K, he's always held it together really well.
So I think all the time really that Rodriguez Hernandez put into Patrick was in that first half of that marathon, which made it incredibly exciting, because we had Matt Marquardt up the front as well, doing all crazy kind of things. So it was, you know, it was Ironman racing at its finest in terms of the way that attritional nature and some of those things that I guess the diehard fans of the sport absolutely love and you can only get in that kind of racing. Or let's say you can only get a Grand Slam tennis when it goes into the fourth or even the fifth hour of a five setter and the guys are literally out on their feet. And and it's just absolutely gripping. I mean, how many Grand Slam matches I've watched in tennis where it's been like that, and even the Nadals, the Djokovic's of this world, or even Andy Murray, and you're just like, you know, that's where, to me, sport can't always just be cramped into X time window, you know.
I love the way you talk.
Got to be able to breathe, you know. I mean, it's like the Masters in golf. Yeah, you're a golf fan, you know, and I appreciate you got young kids, so you don't have the time. But in some ways, like, there's nothing better than just being completely immersed in it, right? For the whole of the third or the fourth.
The battle, mate. In our DNA, we're warriors, mate.
Totally. And I think when we talked, because we did give the PTL a bit of stick here, and I think Charles Adamo's vision around what the Collins Cup was meant to be was really trying to capture some of that Ryder Cup vibe, you know, of that final day singles matches, where if it's kind of, if you know, you know, if you get it, you get it. And I don't know that necessarily translate or maps across to triathlon, because when I spoke to most people about it and tried to explain it, perhaps a little bit like this, they just look at me blankly and go, what the F are you going on about? You weirdo.
Yes, but we're sports mad enthusiasts, mate. I'm watching any chance I get. The only thing we're allowed to have on in our house is sport, right? So our kids don't get to watch any screen time. They get one movie a week.
I'm moving in with you.
And, you know, we'll have, you know, Arsenal playing Tottenham Hotspur, you know, in the Premier League soccer. And then we'll have soccer. Laura really likes the tennis. I love the tennis too, but we'll have the tennis and the golf. And then we put the triathlons on, you know, on the big screen when the big events. Definitely, you know, anything like Kona or whatever always takes our day, and that's fine. But I always look at Kona and Ironman a little bit like cricket. You know, you understand cricket. It's kind of like when the test match is on, the Boxing Day test match in Australia is on, it's on for 5 days. Now, for Americans, like, what?
It's not on for 5 days if England are down there.
Australia's cleaning up in four.
Exactly.
No, we're good. No. But you know what I mean? You have it on in the background. You don't sit and watch. You might sit for 10, 15 minutes and then you'll go to the pool with the kids and come back and, oh, we've got another wicket, whatever. That to me is kind of what I do with Ironman triathlon. It's a day. You put it on, depending on time zones, and you kind of enjoy it and watch it. But, mate, to your point, I think Texas was outstanding. Huge shout out to Thomas Rodriguez, who, by the way, had finished 45th at 70.3 Oceanside and then turned it around and had that win in Ironman Texas. I don't know too much more about his background. Do you know?
Little bits. Yeah, only just little bits because of that, you start looking. He's had some good results. So he ran a 2:38 in Cozumel, which was his only other Ironman race. There was no sweating. The swim was cancelled. That was last year. So he's clearly a good runner. He ran a 1:19 half in. Is it Campeche? Is that how you say it in Mexico?
Campeche?
Campeche. However, conditions by all account were incredibly hot. You know, when they were asking him about how he held up to the heat in Texas, it was basically nothing compared with Mexico. So I think that 1:19 is quicker than a lot of people would credit it.
And well, then he's definitely on his way.
and he raced in Boulder 70.3 last year, and he ran about 70 minutes and came maybe fourth. So there were a few signs there, but he's either 24, 25 now. So you'd expect some like up and down results from a triathlete that age, I would think.
And what about, let's move over to the women.
Look at
her story, mate. Give everybody a recap on Kat Matthews for us. I've got to have her on the show. Kat, if you're listening, remarkable story. She had so many people wanting to talk to her last year. I was kind of like, let's just wait till things will settle down and then we can really enjoy her story. But tell me, you know, what you saw there.
It feels like she's another veteran, doesn't it? But actually, she's really not been in the sport that long. This is the thing. It's just she's great for kind of picking up stories and drama and things. In terms of what she achieved, well, let's keep it to the weekend. Just seemed to brilliantly manage her body through a calf tear that she'd picked up in Texas, and somehow at the weekend managed to get herself to the win. So she got picked up a 5-minute drafting penalty on the bike and then ran a 3-hour flat marathon. I'm not quite sure how she did it, because every time the camera panned to her, she appeared to be walking to give the calf a rest. So when she was then...
when she was running, she was... Remember Jan Frodeno, when Jan first got... Was it third in Kona? And he was running and walking every aid station, and then sprint and then run, walk.
Exactly. I love it. I see that kind of performance. So Kat's just a quality athlete, isn't she? She's one of the six or seven women that could win in Nice, I think, Ironman World Championships in Nice this year. And then, you know, you asked about other great performers. I see Ashley Gentle in Singapore just looks serene, as she does so often.
Big shout out to Ash.
Taylor Nibb in Oceanside.
The big three right now with Gentle, Nibb and Lucy Charles Barclay. Seriously, unbelievable.
Yeah, there's some great talent. I think what Nibb was so good, in my mind, she completely broke the Ironman Pro Series scoring system. Right? And what I mean by that is, because it was every second matters, she was so far ahead of everybody else in that race that even the athletes that came second, third and fourth scored hardly any points because she demolished everybody.
Look, I know when I really analysed her times on that one, because it was one of those where everyone said, oh my God. And I'm a huge fan of all the women in that race. So I'm not going to be pointing finger, you know, Emma Plant Brown, huge fan, and huge fan of Taylor's. But was it that Taylor had the most outstanding performance, or were the other women just slightly off their game a little bit as well? Like it was almost, it looked to me as if, yes, Taylor had an outstanding race, but almost she crushed them so early on that it almost just we're racing for second. I don't know. It was an interesting one.
Yeah, that's a fair observation. I think we'd have to. I'm trying to think who came second actually.
I think it was Emma, wasn't it?
Emma Pallant Brown potentially ran away up to second.
Emma,
I've got it in front of me, actually. So
yeah, let me have a look. I'll beat you to it.
I'll tell you one. Okay.
Yeah, it was second. There we go. And then, Paula Finley in third.
Yeah,
and it was when Taylor did the 218 bike, it's a solid, good bike. Not saying that. But when you look at the men, Lionel and everyone, they did a 205. And then you look at her 120 run, which was good, but the men were running that kind of, 10 minutes faster again. And I always look at a 70.3 between a man and a woman. The best man versus women is usually 25 minutes. And between nine men, it's usually 50 minutes, give or take. Mm-hmm. So when you look at an outstanding women's performance, it's obviously a shorter gap, and an outstanding man is a bit long. Oceanside was almost exactly 25 minutes between Lionel Sanders and Taylor Nibb.
Mm.
And so for me, that's right on the money for those two.
Mm.
And so I couldn't tell, don't get me wrong, Taylor Nibb, huge fan. I think she's we haven't even got to the Olympics yet, but I think her performance was really quality. Lionel's performance, really quality.
Yeah.
I just feel like maybe Emma Plant and Paula and the others were just a little. I think there's more that they can give.
I think you're right. I do think you're right. And I think we can probably cut Emma Pallant Brown a bit of slack, because she had the most horrific run up into that race, where she pulled out in Miami, where she'd been a heat stroke again, I think. Probably not the first time in Miami. And then she had a bike crash as well coming into Oceanside. So I think her running, where she ran a race best 118 half marathon in Oceanside. So I think by the time she'd finished that, she was probably pretty chuffed. But I think, you're right, overall times.
For her bike at a 227 and Paul's bike
off,
at a 228.
Yeah.
They're good five minutes off what they could have been doing there. So anyway, big shout out to all of them. You can tell that you and I are big fans. we're like, this is awesome. Let's shift. We have the Olympics coming up, mate. We're recording this. What are we? April 30th. One more day till May. Can't believe it. Olympic Games, Paris. Mm. First thoughts on the course from your understanding. And do you think there's going to be a swim?
I think 100% there's going to be a swim.
Good.
Yeah. Well, whatever happens, I think there'll be a swim. What state we'll see the athletes for the mixed relay is anyone's guess. And I do think that is something to consider, because, in Olympics games past, Tokyo accepted, if athletes were a little bit sick after the individual event, then
you didn't matter.
You didn't matter, right? Well, it mattered, but it didn't matter to the extent that you've got a race again in 3 or 4 days. So I think that is an issue, but I can't see any way where it doesn't happen without a swim. They've invested 1.5 billion or something, haven't they? It's a crazy amount of money that they put into it.
That's amazing.
To try and clean it up. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we swam in it in 96, by the way. Everybody listening, we had a World Cup Paris in 96.
Oh, well, I'm glad you said that. And that actually proves me wrong, because I think I've overlooked that when I've done reports on this. So I'm glad you corrected us on that one.
Mate, I've got an extra
experience on it.
Look, I've told this story. So it was an amazing race. The actual transition area was right under the Eiffel Tower. And it was meant to be, it was the first ever sprint triathlon in the ITU World Cup Series. And so it had always been an Olympic distance. It was a sprint, 750, 20 and 5. The water was running so rapid that they decided to take us way up river, because we were going to be going so fast. And we went all the way up in these buses, and then we're warming up. Firstly, I'm warming up with Jason Meadows and Chris McCormack, and we were running along, and there was a dead dog on the side of the river. And that was a bit foul. And then we saw all the dead fish floating on top. And I'm not lying. I'm not saying this to make everyone alarmist or anything, but it was what you would call a dead river. And there were dead fish. Anyway, we didn't care. I mean, this is 96. I don't think they were even testing water quality back then. Maybe they were, but we did the race and flew down the river, dodging all the bridges because we were going so fast, and got out and did the race. And it was a great race. I think Olivier Marceau might have won. Swiss, French become Swiss. That was 96. And I don't know. Look, water quality has become a bigger thing, and a good thing it is. I'm not and I think to your point, I think they will get it to a point where they'll measure in the right place.
I think there's enough wiggle room in the rules that they'll be able to.
Not that we want athletes to get sick or anything else, but I do think it's going to be a better Nick than it was when we did it in 96. So I agree with you. I think we will have the swim. Okay, so who's your who are your picks?
So I think it's still interesting in terms of, so I think the current makes the course interesting because it makes it interesting where they're going to line up on the pontoon. So for a lot of them, that's something to decide upon, right?
Are they going up against the current and coming back, or are they doing a one-way spin?
It's an out and back. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
good.
And then obviously the bike course is flat, right? So and it looked by the test event that it probably wasn't going to break up a bit. So that remains to be seen if it does. You'd probably say the chances are that it is going to be a runner's race. Mm-hmm. So on that score, I think Beth Potter for GB is, she's certainly in pole position for she's the world champion. She won the test event last year. She's steadily improved since she came to the sport. I mean, the other day in the indoor super try, she looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. I know that's you can't put too much of a judgment on that, but it's just showing that she's training well and training through well. Mm-hmm. And unlike any other GB woman, she has a selection at the moment as well. So that is an important thing because it means that she's been able to focus for the last X months all the way through to Paris. Is that her number one and only objective? Whereas everyone else has to fight for qualification. So I do feel that's a big thing. I think Cassandra Beaugrand will be the pick of the French, but then you shouldn't write off Emma Lobardi as well. So they've got French for some terrific athletes. Taylor Nibb is, of course, you know, as we've already mentioned, super powerful, and I think for Taylor it's going to be a question of whether she can get her run down into that 32 low 32 or 32 something range, which is rapid, right? You know, or there has to be something where the bike breaks up for her, so that she can be then the best of a bike breakaway. And I think there's people like Laura Lindemann on the German side, who could do. Will Flora Duffy come back? You know, we haven't seen much of her for quite a while.
It's hard to say. We haven't had a form guide this year by not getting Abu Dhabi.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could really pick anyone right now and say and make a case for them because exactly what you say, and we really haven't seen anybody. We've only had a few World Cups, but
I think you've nailed a couple of the big names. What about Georgia Taylor Brown? Is she? You know, what do we think?
She's coming off that really bad injury. And then I guess for her, it's a place where she needs to then prove fitness and then get one of the two remaining slots. My take, and this is without having any inside knowledge at all on this, is that I think from a GB selection position, they would love to select her as the next athlete. Yeah. And then it will probably be a toss up between Kate Woff and Sophie Caldwell for the third spot.
What's it with the British always having so many?
Well, you know, we've still got Vicky Hollands racing.
Yes, Vic's back.
Jess Learmonth was an Olympic medalist in Tokyo, and has become a mum, and it's going to come a bit quickly for her now, I think. And then you know, Sian Rainsley won a World Cup the other day as well. So the list goes on.
The Americans coming back too.
Well, the Americans is fascinating, isn't it? I mean, are we going to see Gwen Jorgensen on the start line?
I don't know. big shout out that we'll see what happens there. Okay. I think it's coming up right in this next week or two.
I mean, Yokohama, isn't it, is that big race. So it's been the big scramble to get on the start line for Yokohama. I don't actually have the Yokohama start list in front of me, otherwise we could have dissected that and gone properly into the weeds on it. But, you know, wouldn't it be fascinating to see Jorgensen there because, you know, we know how well she can run off the bike. If she could deliver something, it would be absolutely phenomenal. But I don't know. I mean, it's fascinating, interesting, and let's see what happens. Yeah,
I think you've crushed it, mate, with the women. Yeah. I really think you nailed it, Beth Potter. I think for the French, it'd be just, you know, on home soil to have Cassandra Beaugrand, you know, crush it would be great for the sport to some degree as a whole. Home soil or gold medals, but don't take anything away against the others. But let's move on to the men. You know, what are you thinking there? When the French men have been so strong.
I know they really have. I think I think top line, the two to beat going in are Yi and Wild. And that's how I see it. But then I see not far below them, you have the French trio, which are all capable. And that's Bergère, Konings, Lecor, or Vince Louis.
Could you imagine Vince coming back? Come on, Vince.
Exactly. So, yeah, and I mean, I'm hearing that there's some, at the moment as it stands, Lecor and Konings are the two with the places. So yeah. In theory, it's between Bergère and Vince Louis for that third spot.
Now, no, Bergère's not in.
No, he's not officially. However, I think the selection, the way that the selection criteria has been written, there might again be, and I've said this a few times, there might be some wiggle room, right? So let's just wait and see who actually ends up going.
Wow.
I think for them, Lecor was a shock to qualify.
Yeah.
And obviously Vince Louis has been injured, but you know what a powerhouse athlete he is and how much he can affect the race.
Yeah.
So where they're going to decide in the end, anyone's guess. And then, of course,
you've left out big one. Oh, sorry, go on.
No. Alongside them, who I think is just below Yi and Wild, is Christian Blumenfeld.
Yes.
Is he the one you're going to say?
Yeah, he is, mate. Yeah. More because it's like when I had Olive on the show the other day, he said, all our focus is getting Christian.
Yeah.
The Olympics. Yeah. And then he mentioned on the show, which no one's picked up on, by the way, and that, you know, this will be his last year in triathlon.
What Blumenfeld said that. Olive said that about
Olive
Blumenfeld.
Said that, you know, potentially at the end of this year, he's going to be looking at something else.
And cycling.
I don't know if that's cycling. I imagine cycling, because I was asking Camworth about it offline.
Yeah.
I think. But, I kind of look at Christian. I know how they prepare. With I don't know. It'll be, you know, you remember he's the defending champion, which is only 3 years ago. It's not like the form guide. We're not having to look too far back. You know, Tokyo was just there. I always want to do a big shout out to Hayden Wild. Just, you know, his story is just really cool. So I'm a big fan of Hayden.
Yep.
Matt Hauser. Come on, Aussies.
He's name on my list. And I think just because he's such a great all-round triathlete, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He's a good man. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's been very intentional about the way he's approaching this year.
Yeah. And it's about time the Aussies did something, particularly the Aussie men, right?
Mate, I'm still the best Aussie at fourth, and that's not a good thing. For men at the Olympics, we don't have a medal.
Wow. Yeah.
I know. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That needs to be rectified.
It does need to be rectified.
It really does.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway, I think... Look, we've probably got a lot of people yelling at us and screaming about so-and-so. And look, there's loads of other people that could miss. Like you said, if it all comes together as a running race, man, you know, you're talking about someone who's running a 13:30 rather than a 13:40.
Yeah. And that is the other name is Pearson from the USA.
Yes.
He's the other guy that I just think if it comes down to a running race.
If it all comes together,
you can't rule him out.
What about the relay then? Because...
Yeah, three from four. Germany, GB, France, and USA.
And to
pick your winner, you look at the women because they're on the anchor.
Well, not just that, mate. I'll add, women are on the course 10% longer.
That's true. That's true.
So if you have the two strongest women, they're on the course 10% longer.
That's true. Yep, absolutely.
It's a big deal. Anyway.
And plus the sprint finish, right, which you need to have the ability to run that last 1.6K or whatever it is. So therefore, somebody like the Germans, if they've got Lindemann on the anchor, for example, and they won the test event, albeit it was turned into a duathlon, but you'd think GB are well-placed with Potter, France.
Team GB is going to be almost impossible. Team GB in France. I know Germans, you've thrown the Germans there, but the French and the Brits. Honestly,
it's not the weakness there.
Those two. And then Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, USA, maybe, but the men need to, you know, I say it's all about the women, but the USA.
Yeah, that's the other thing about the relay is that you can't have a weak link, I think.
No.
You need four good links in the chain. And if you've got a weak one, that can be race over for you. So,
But I will say two strong women. I'm going to lead with that If you could pick two strong men versus two strong women, I'll take two strong women all day.
Yeah.
And that's what Britain and France and the US all have.
Yeah, fair. It's still quite young, isn't it, in terms of, it's obviously very young in terms of an Olympic sport, right? So we're still, yeah. I feel like we're still trying to figure it out in some ways. Yeah. You know, even working out, is there such a thing as a specialist relay athlete?
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely convinced that there is, although I'm sure that some of the physiology and the testing that they've done maybe begs to differ with that. But yeah, and I think they're probably looking. You need to not have a weakness on the swim and the bike, particularly. So yeah.
What do you think about? Let's shift. Let's move it on. We've covered the Olympics, and I'm very aware of your time. But
yeah,
let's quickly just run through Kona Ironman for the men this year. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts? Have you thought anything about the predictions for that, or are you still kind of looking at the form guide as the year goes on?
I think we should still be looking at the form guide, but names now, as we, I think Sam Laidlow will be, can come strong on his day. We know he can. We know what he did there. Well, it'll be 2 years ago by the time they go back, incoming second, wasn't it? I mean, he beat Blumenfeld and he broke the bike course record. So I think you certainly can't write him off. I think Ditlev, who was a high performer in Miami and is consistently a high performer. He is the one athlete, I think, who does scare the Norwegians, only one potentially. I think if he's targeting it, then he's the threat. If Blumenfeld could potentially spin the dice and have a go at that. Whether he's got a chance to, whether he's got long enough to make any preparation after the Olympics, I don't know. But if he has a good result in the Olympics, the pressure will be off. And then I suppose coming from behind, I think Patrick Langer is still a very smart racer who shows consistently that he can deliver on the particularly in the hot conditions, and he delivered in Nice as well to run himself up to second. So he'd be another name that I'd put in there. So
there's so many, mate. It's hard to pick Kona so far out.
It is. I think in some ways with it though, it feels like we've turned a bit of a leaf in some ways with the sport now, because we're not talking about Frodeno anymore going back to Kona. No,
Sebastian Kienle, Tio, all of these people.
Exactly.
Generational change.
Exactly that. And also, even though Javier Gomez and Alistair Brownlee are still racing, they go back, we're not going to be talking about them as favourites for Hawaii this year.
No, that's true.
Whereas previously, I would have, and you would, I'm sure, probably as well, I would have definitely had those names in the hat just because you know how good they are and how many world titles and Olympic medals they've got. So
they're unbelievable. They're really unbelievable. You know, Javi and I used to train together and live together a lot in Australia for years and years. I trained with the best of the world for 30 years. I really did. Mm-hmm. I was so privileged to both men and women. And I got to say, training with Javier Gomez, I know I trained with arguably one of the greatest I've ever seen do the sport across swim, bike, run. The only place I could get him was maybe a little bit on the bike.
Really?
Watching a guy that could do what he did. There was one time, I'm digressing a little bit, but
no, please.
We did a run, a Sunday run or Tuesday run. And I always liked, actually, maybe it was him with a Sunday. But I always like to do a 20-mile run or 32K, and I'd always do it pretty well, like hold between 330, 345K pace. I always figured if I could do that well, I could sprint a 10K. And he joined me for one of these runs up until about 25K. So he, cooked it, and I think he even took off the last 5K and did his own thing. But I would then go to the pool and, do an easy kind of 2K swim or whatever to recover. And he does that with me, and then he says, "Oh, Greg, do you mind? I might just do a 1500. I'm like, "Oh yeah, mate, go ahead, do whatever you want to do. I'm done." And then just watching him flip and holding 106s, 107s, long course 50 meter for a 1500 recovery swim, I was like, "Huh,
yeah,
this guy's next level. It's unbelievable." Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, he's just so technically adept, isn't he?
He's beautiful to watch. Flawless. Beautiful to watch.
Do you, on that, I mean, you know him so well. Have we seen can he come back? You know, he's got a T100 contract. He's obviously missed the first two races.
Yeah, he can.
You genuinely think he can come back and pull some results? That's good to know.
I don't know that, in fairness, I don't know the T100's his right distance. I still consider Javier one of the great shorter distance. He has a massive VO2 and he knows how to sit at a high percentage of the VO2 for long periods of time. A bit like Alistair, like their ability, they have decent VO2s. They're not as high as the Norwegians and all the numbers we hear, but they're high. And what they can do is sit at a high percentage of it for a long time. Now, the longer you go, the less, yes, you still need a strong VO2 and you need to be able to hit it, but it negates that and becomes more of a aerobic conditioning and strength. And not that they don't have that, both Alistair and Gomez. I just know that their talents, their raw skill sets and where they trained for 20 years of their lives is in a certain area. And so even for me, I spent my whole life, 25 years, focused on an hour 45 event. And then when I started doing 70.3s, yes, I got to win about half of the ones I went in and it was good, but they were always uncomfortable. And I never liked them because it just wasn't where my body naturally wanted to be. Now, whether that was because my talents were there or because I'd trained a specific way for so, so long, the body just, and that's, so yes, I think Javier can come back to who he is as an athlete, but who he is as an athlete, is he a T100 athlete or would have he been better in a non-drafting Olympic, you know, or a drafting Olympic? Not drafting, I think non-drafting Olympic would suit Javier more. But in saying that, I do think potentially if he can get healthy, you know, when you lose your mom or a loved one suddenly, I think it can affect you emotionally in a way that then can affect you physically. Yeah. But we often don't put those together. Yeah. A bit like what we saw with Gustav Iden and what he went through last year, him losing his mother suddenly, and then suddenly they're injured and blah, blah, blah. Like these injuries for me often become because of stress. And that stress, whatever form it comes in, is what creates it. So, you know, big shout out to both of those guys and what they've been going through and having to rebuild. And I do think Javier can still be a disruptor. I don't know what that means exactly, but I'm certainly rooting for him.
Good to hear. I think we would love to, you know, see him come back and, see what he can do still. Definitely.
You know, I have so much more to talk to you about.
If you want to do the women, we have to do the women for Nice.
I meant to do that. No. I had that on the thing. Before we get everybody yelling at me, I'm like, no. Okay, go on.
So I think for me, there's no Lucy Charles Barkley, at least as not as it stands. She said she's not going to go and defend her Ironman world title. So for me, it's the other big six. And those are Kat Matthews, who we've talked about.
Yeah.
Daniela Ryf, who still got potential to pull out the one big race like she did in Roth last year. Sky Munch, I think she's in that now. Laura Phillip, Anne Haug, and Chelsea Sodara. And those are the names for me. So I think you pick your winner from that lot.
Well done, mate. That was solid. And I'm hoping Chelsea can find, you know, she's there. She's still there. She's not actually going too bad, but I think she's got another gear to find.
Yep.
Kat has definitely found a form. And Laura Phillip, I feel like sometimes we don't talk about her enough, but her, I think she gets overshadowed by Anna Hug, but to be honest, I think between the two of them, you know, Anna Hug is still my big dark horse there. Daniela, I can't tell if, you know, if she got one foot out a little bit. You know, anyway, we'll see, mate. It's a different course for them, different conditions. But I think you've nailed that. I'm trying to even think who I would add in there. You know, cause like without Lucy there and Ashley Gentle staying focused on the shorter, who do you think's going to win on the T100 between those two? Or maybe there's more, but
for the T100 series, if you had to pick right now, I think Ashley Gentle, because I think that she's got the potential to be able to win more races. So I think Lucy Charles Barkley is always going to be there and on the podium, but she's had 2 seconds so far. So it's a similar format to the way that World Triathlon Championship Series has been run, right? And if you can get the wins on the board, and then it can put you in a strong position going into the grand final. And so, because it's three series races plus the grand final are going to be your four counting scores. So that, to me, puts Ash in the hot seat there.
And I think they've done well, actually, the T100 series in the way they've weighted the wins. So it's, you know, 35 points for a win, 28 for second. So it's a decent jump, which I think it should be. And then it goes third is 25. So I like that the win has a really, you win, because I'm all about if you win, winning matters.
Yeah.
Podiums are great, but whoever wins should really get that massive chunk. But yeah, no. And what about for the men? Who we think going to win that series? We still don't wait.
It's too far to go. Too far. Too, I mean, I think Sam Long's in the best position right now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
And I also think he's just a great character for the sport. And
he's doing well. He's
doing really well. Yeah. And he's definitely one that's one of the more marketable people in the sport. So, you know, whether it's his racing style, I mean, how far out behind was he coming out of the water in Singapore and then he comes through to second? I mean, you've got
bike run combo right now. Exactly. He's like doubling down on his strengths.
You love to see that. Or some of the crazy stuff he comes out with either on his YouTube channel or just in interviews in general. Yeah. He's larger than life and that's what you need. Yeah. It takes all sorts, but I think I like his character. He's quite unique.
Well, mate, this has been really cool. Like I said, I've got all these amazing more questions for you, but I want to be conscious of your time. And what I'd love to do is even have you back. Maybe, you know, you could be a regular as we kind of explore the sport where it's at, maybe post-Kona or pre-Kona, I don't know, something this year, we could do another chat. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'd love to, mate. It's been really fun chatting with you, Greg.
Yes, I got lost in the time. I love these conversations where I go, oh, crap, it's an hour.
That's okay. No problem at all. People are just, if they're listening on the run, they just have to extend their run a bit.
That's right. Keep listening.
Definitely.
And where do people follow you then? Where Twitter? How do they follow you there?
So I think Twitter's probably, I'll post stuff there or you know, my articles will come out in 220 Triathlon or on Triathlete. And that door's always open as well. You know, if people want to reach out, if they need anything or if they ever want, you know, to ask any questions at all, I always try to be there for people. I think that's one of the great things about this sport, right, is how people support one another. There was a young lad who contacted me with a research study the other day and I was like, yeah, this is really interesting, you know, let's see if we can spread this a bit wider and get some feedback for him. So you just as much as you can help each other, I think that's the way forward. What comes around goes around or whatever the saying is, right?
Yeah, no, I love it, mate. Good on you. And what, are you going to any events this year or what's your plan? Any travel?
So I think the Olympics are in the pipeline, so that should be very exciting. Cool. Looking forward to that. And then whether we'll make it out to Kona again. I've been in Kona the last 2 years. The potential, but I would think Nice is definitely on the cards. I head over there. Let's try and make it to the London T100 as well. We should try and do that.
The grand final for T100? What are you thinking?
Oh, as in where do I think it will be?
Well, are you going to go or do you, do we even know where it is yet?
We don't know where it's going to be. I think they've said it's in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So you can take your pick. Yeah. The penultimate one's in Dubai. And then I think I would say that the final is in a country not too far from Dubai. So
people can have a look on the map
and try and work that out.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That would be quite interesting actually to head over there for the final as well.
Cool.
And then it's the 70.3 Worlds, which we didn't talk about at all.
There's so many events.
there really is.
We brushed right over it.
I know.
I'll pick Sam Long for the win and Taylor Nibb for the win on those. No, I just threw names out.
I got to be far away. That will be the end of a very long season. It'll be interesting to see you there.
November, you know what?
Everyone you speak to, every athlete you speak to is targeting that event. And I don't know whether it's just because it's after everything else. So therefore they think, you know what?
No one's going to be there.
Yeah. Or like the T100 athletes going, I've done all these events. Well, I may as well just throw this one in as well.
Yeah.
And obviously the long distance athlete, it's far enough after Hawaii, even further after Nice that actually you can have a go at it if you want to. So much triathlon.
We did good, mate. I think we should give ourselves a pat on the back. We just covered a lot about the sport.
We did cover a lot. Yeah. And do you know what? You kindly sent the question through before and we didn't get to half the questions as well. No, we haven't.
I didn't do your final four and rapid fires and we didn't talk opinions and equipment. We got a lot more to do, but conscious of your time. And I do want to, you know, see if we can lock you in for later. Maybe we can become a bit more of a regular or something. We can do something. Be great.
Yeah, that'd be fun, Greg. No.
All right.
Look forward to it.
Well, stay on the line, mate. I really appreciate you. For everybody else, you can find all the show notes, timestamps, and everything else at bennettendurance.com/media. All right. Cheers, Tim.